Well, if you've just joined us, you're watching Stock Watch. Taking your questions tonight are Rikus Kombrink from Capicraft, Rikus Rieders from PSG Wealth. Don't forget to send through those questions via SMS to 41392. You can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. You can also tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag StockWatch. Before we get started, though, here's how the JSE ended the day in a drop in financial and industrial shares. Left the all share just over a fifth of a percent weaker. Finney 15 shedding 0.8%, the industrial 25 dropping a third of a percent, and resources adding just over half a percent today. Gents, a very good evening. And there was a bit of a turnaround this afternoon, Drikus, particularly for financial shares. First Rand leading them lower, it was down 3.8%, but the other banks also weaker.
First Rand down a bit more because it was ex-div today. Together with RMH, which is the holding company. But we saw a general turn in the market late afternoon. I think a lot of the euphoria or optimism that we opened with went out the window. We're dislocating a bit from international markets to a great extent. I think the bigger themes at play is that the trust between the corporate leaders or the management of companies and your institutional investors is at a low point, you know, we've had corporate stories around Steinhoff, and you had EOH, you have a lot of rumors around other companies, and then there's corporate governance frustrations, if I can call it that, with companies like Naspers. There's a lot of rumors around Aspen. We had the Resilience Stable, so trust in the management in general at the moment is at a low point.
I know it's an associated company, but do you think Capitec managed to rebuild some trust with their results today, because they look pretty good and its share was up over 3%, although I think it retraced most of those gains, but still ended a little bit higher?
In line with the bank, I think. As you said, I can't really commentate on that except for the fact that I couldn't see any surprises or anything negative. In other words, very much still transaction growth, very much still deposit growth, if I can.
Yeah, and aiming for 10 million customers, so I think higher than they ever expected to have.
It is. It's great results, especially compared to the period that they've been in. It's been a difficult economic and political environment that we've come out of in 2017, and they've showed excellent growth in that environment. The problem is it's getting harder and harder to move the needle. 100,000 customers a month added on a 10 million base is not moving the needle as it did a few years ago. So we're seeing that. So the growth differential between First Rand and a Capitec is closing, and the valuation is closing as well. So I don't think Capitec is cheap enough at these levels to warrant a buy, even in the context of these great results.
I'm sure you can comment on whether you saw anything in there that could justify some of the reports by Viceroy about Capitec.
Not really. It's astounding how they keep, how well they run their bad debt book, and I can understand why Viceroy would be targeting that, you know. But the real explanation, and that's what most investors in SA has accepted over time, because we know the company for a long time, is that it's an extremely well-run company.
Any other thoughts on why the financials were generally weaker today, Rikus, particularly ahead of the MPC decisions, because I think it's kind of generally accepted that they're likely to cut interest rates by at least 25 basis points?
Yeah, it didn't really start today. It started about three or four trading days ago, with the whole, you know, financial index was lumbering along at, you know, at sort of 52-week highs, and then all of a sudden we've just seen a turnaround, if I can call it that. Whether it's just following the lead about on what's happening in American markets, I don't know, but I think a lot of it has to do with a sector that's run very well and is now just having a bit of a pullback. So no alarm bells. I think it's just getting back to more acceptable levels, certainly levels where I would say, okay, you know, maybe it's time to start nibbling again.
Well, we have a question from Esbia, who says, going to your comments about the dislocation of the JSE from global markets, She asked if the US stock market bull run is over, how's this going to influence emerging markets and in particular the JSE? Should you go long resources and short banks?
No, you should go long cash, full stop. US dollar cash, full stop. Now, if rates continue to rise, inflation picks up speed in the US, then eventually it will eat into growth in the US, and you'll have a recession there, and short-term bond yields will attract a lot of capital back to the US out of emerging markets. The cost of capital, or the cost of funding, the carry trade, so to speak, at the moment will be too high, and emerging markets will get hurt.
Mm. Is that
it doesn't matter what you own.
That sounds like the worst case scenario though.
I'm certainly not going to call the end of a bull market at all. But I do believe that the American markets are correcting again, the sort of Trump rally that we've had, and very much so in the technology sector, and as I said before, you know, Facebook was just something that was waiting to happen. It could have happened with any of those market leaders. A bit of bad news and everybody says, wow, that's the hectic valuation that you're trading at. Maybe we should take a second look at that. And thirdly, you guys have been developing with very cheap money, and all of a sudden, money is getting more expensive. Whatever your technology field you're developing in must start returning some cash. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a bit of a sector change there. Plus, as I said, just a bit of a step back from really what was an exponential growth rate as far as the indices were concerned.
Yeah. So Sahel would like to know if there's any hope for resilience in Fortress. You were talking about companies operating under a shadow. Does he or she sell their shares and cut their losses?
I'm not sure. I'm not a property specialist. It's not my niche, but from what I can see is that not all the skeletons are out of a closet as of yet. Like Warren Buffett always says, there's never only one cockroach in the kitchen. And I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that will follow. If some of the allegations or some of the, if some of those are true, and then it's basically a house of cards. And property companies are generally highly geared, and it's like a house of cards that can come piling down. So there is, that's not the base case, but there is an outside chance that the company might face an existential event in the next year or so. But it remains to be seen. So it's borderline uninvestable to me at this moment.
Mm. Would you be holding on if you had shares, though, Rikus?
We were talking off camera just before we started about not only the resilience table, but a number of other companies that are a very difficult call at the moment, things like Steinhoff and Bright. And I think the answer to the resilient question lies in what we were talking about. It's difficult to make a call. And why is it difficult? Because there's so little information available, or conflicting information available, or conflicting opinions, conflicting sentiment. It's a difficult thing. And I like to keep my investment decisions easy. Mm-hmm. So if you're sitting with this group in your portfolio, you've got to ask yourself the question, isn't there something far easier to understand, of at least equal paper value, if you want to call it that, that you've got a far more clear feeling and insight into than sitting with this conundrum of holding or selling. In other words, don't sell and then go and say, what do I do now? Decide first of all, okay, I'm going to use this money, and what am I going to put into? Every individual investor have got to answer that question himself. But certainly as to whether one should sell, decide where you're going to put it and make it easy.
You have to reframe your frame of mind. You have to take a step back and ask yourself, if I never invested in this company, would I be willing to buy this, having the information that I have, the imperfect information that I have, would I be willing to buy? And generally then my view is that most of those companies go into the too hard to analyze pile, and just leave it there. There's enough other opportunities out there that you can dig into. You know, time is also a resource. You must manage your time when researching.
Mm-hmm. Well, with all the information that you have, Rikus, Benny would like to know, would you be buying Star? So Steinhoff Africa Retail.
Well, unfortunately, I base my decisions half on fundamentals and half on technical. So on the technical side, it's easy. I don't have enough data. I don't know yet. Fundamentals, I think, I really don't know. Are there, in what they do, again, are there better opportunities that you know more of a track record? Probably. So I'm possibly being overcautious, but, you know, and maybe missing a good opportunity. But in the end, I'd like to see a few 6 month or at least yearly earnings before I can say, okay, this is how everything fits together. Mm-hmm. So I'm basically sitting on the fence here and chickening out.
Are you chickening out?
December last year, when the price of Star fell with the price of Steinhoff, there was enough margin of safety in the price.
So when it was down at 16?
Yeah, we bought at 16 rand 10 cents. And we piled in there, was a good buy. And after a short due diligence, because there wasn't a lot of time to do due diligence, you know, the general conclusion is that there weren't enough time after Pepco was bought by Steinhoff to inflict too much of the cultural institutional damage that Steinhoff has inflicted on the rest of the business, mm-hmm. on the Pepco business. So most of it is largely untainted, but I don't think Star will come off scot-free. And the second problem is Steinhoff still owns the majority of his shareholding, and they might be required to sell that. Maybe in coming months even, and that provides an overhang over the stock. So from a technical, you know, perspective, that overhang is negative. They are bringing out results in the next month or two, and I would wait for those results before making a decision on the stock again.
No. Okay. Then Abdullah would like to know, or asks whether you can shed some light on why Vodacom is trading so wishy-washy, and why MTN initially jumped 13% after superb results and dividends, and soon after has fallen all the way back.
I think, the Vodacom question is obviously it's an African exposure, and the debate there is about fees and the ruling as far as bandwidth is concerned, that is either expected or very soon to be discussed. So I think that's the main risk to Vodacom over there. MTN, I'm not too sure, because they had a nice run up to their results. Results come out, I thought they were okay, and I think the price dropped from about 130 to 117, 118. Not too sure why that came under pressure as much as it did.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on those two?
Yeah, well, I like MTN for a few reasons. It's firstly is that they've got quite a unique profile. They've got 200 million clients in sub-Saharan Africa. I know of no other company on the planet that has that profile, you know, that footprint. So that's quite a unique footprint, and us in being the first mover in most of their countries and being the dominant player, I see that as a huge advantage going forward. I think they've been through a tough time. I think the previous management team have scored a lot of goals. We've got basically a new management team in the last year or two, mm-hmm. and I think there's still some cool advantages in the business. It seems expensive when you look at it from a PE basis or from a price to free cash flow, because they're still paying down a lot of other debts and stuff, which curtails the capex, which is a bit of a concern. But at the end of the day, I think your upside risk or your upside here is more than the downside, and with oil prices, you know, being a dominating factor in most of their markets, mm-hmm. commodity prices as well, that being at an elevated level, I see that spending coming through their markets and lifting the earnings together with a recovery story from a turnaround story from management. I think there's a lot of upside here over the medium term.
Okay,
totally agree with that.
Well, on that note, we'll have to go to a break, and keep sending through those questions via SMS to 41392. You can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, and you can also tweet us at BusinessDayTV. Welcome back. Time to check out how global markets are trading. We're starting off in the United States, where you can see some of the indices are continuing the recovery that started yesterday. S&P 500 building on that, as is the Dow. Of course, there is some hope that a trade pact will be reached between the United States and China rather than a trade war. NASDAQ, though, being dragged weaker by the tech shares, down by 0.75%. Across the Atlantic, we had the FTSE ending 4 days of losses. It's up 1.6% at the close. The CAC 40 in Paris, 1% higher, and the DAX up by 1.5%. Still with me in studio are Rikus Riedus from PSG Wealth, Drikus Kombrink from Capicroft. We're taking your questions and ascend us, Rikus, or descend us, as you perhaps said. So Derek would like to know. Yeah. I mean, the results, he said, looked pretty good, and there's a new CEO coming on board, yet the share price is dropping. Do you have any idea why?
I've basically not looked at them apart from their price decline. I didn't like the business at the start, and I'm still not convinced that I would buy that rather than something like Adcock or even Aspen at these levels. Mm-hmm. So, no, I'm not looking at it, and I don't think I'll look at it for a long while.
I know there has been also some concern about their gearing, which they took in order to make all those offshore acquisitions. Drikus?
Generally, acquisitive companies are not on my buy list. Acquisitive companies have actually done quite well in the last few years, and that's why it's been a growing trend for corporates all over the globe. And one thing that has fueled that is, you know, ultra-low rates. When the cost of capital is near negligible, then you know, the cost of being wrong is so much less. And unfortunately, you know, sometime or another, the tide will come out, or you will buy an acquisition that comes back to bite you. And we've seen that with a few healthcare stocks. We've seen them with basically all our healthcare stocks, Netcare, Life Healthcare, and MediClinic, as well as Aspen, your pharmaceuticals. And you know, what's strange is you've got quite a similar theme overseas with those pharmaceutical companies. If you think about Valiant, and I think the business model for pharmaceuticals, especially, is under scrutiny at the moment. There's a lot of regulatory risk, regulatory upside as well in the US, but there's a lot of regulatory risk, and the business model is under scrutiny at the moment. And that, I think, as a whole, management investors are re-looking at the sector and asking what is a viable business model for these companies going forward?
Okay. Foresight, have either of you looked at Foresight?
No, not at all.
Okay. Stefanity Stocks or ARB Holdings from Atlanta?
I haven't looked at Stefanity Stocks in ages, so I can't comment on that. ARB Holdings, still a heck of a lot of cash, very conservatively run. Should do well if we do get the South African story on the go. I mean, they basically specialize in what you put in after you've built it. So in that sense, maybe a bit of a sleeper as far as ARBH is concerned.
Okay. Do you look at either of those?
No, with especially, well, both of them are actually in the construction sector, or I'll get to that. It will be, even if there's a proper new dawn in SA, and we've got proper growth, 3% plus growth coming in 2019 or 2020, you know, we've got proper growth coming through, it will take a long time before we see real infrastructure spending, because the fiscal realities are still there and won't go away in the near or even medium term. So I don't see a big revival in infrastructure spending. That having said that, and most investors, you know, knows that they've already priced that in. So I think a lot of your construction companies are trading at ridiculously low valuations, and you know, the slightest good news on the infrastructure fund or construction fund will bode well for these stocks. We saw that with Murray and Roberts with the takeover bid now coming from a German company that took a stake last year already, and the company, you know, jumped 40%, and that might be a good indication of the value that's in the sector at the moment. I'm not a buyer, because I don't like companies that's, you know, geared to such an extent to the economic cycle.
Yeah. Did you look at Murray and Roberts today? Because I see they came out with a statement saying they're not going to recommend the offer.
Nine.
And the share fell 4%. But yesterday, as Tricker said, it was up 45% yesterday. So do you think this is the market saying, well, they think the deal is going to go ahead regardless of what Marianne Roberts' management said?
Well, they were all eyeing the cash offer, obviously. But I think the secondary story to that, and to what Brickus alluded to as well, there's a lot of construction type companies that are really trading at very, 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 very low valuations. And maybe at some stage, and again, I don't know about Stefanoutis, but that's why I said IRH, maybe people will say, well, we've got to find value somewhere. Something is a buy at some price. But the most interesting about Marianne Roberts is just the type of value switch you get all of a sudden when the spotlight shifts to that neglected sector.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Merafe, it's a buy at the current price?
Yeah. Chrome has done tremendously well the last few months, last year or so. Great recovery from the commodity lows. You know, as most base metals and various metals had a great recovery. Normally, investing in cyclicals like resources, one lesson a previous colleague taught me that's always stuck is you buy these companies when they're trading at ridiculously high PEs, you know, when there's no earnings. That's when you're supposed to buy them.
Okay.
Not when they're looking cheap and when the commodity prices are high, because that tide can go out fairly quickly. Mm. If China, you know, catches a cold, you know, chrome prices can drop 30% overnight, and that will absolutely decimate the profit.
And I think they attributed the recent results partly to the strength of China.
Absolutely. So, yeah. You know, China to me is becoming more fragile day by day, from a banking perspective. The potential, the banking assets as a percentage of their GDP dwarfs at the moment what the US banking assets as a percentage of GDP was before the banking crisis in 2008.
Mm. Rafi, for you?
Yeah, again, commodity shares are always a problem. Single commodity shares, where Merafe and Chrome is even a bigger problem because they're so dependent on that one core metal. So one has to take a look at where we are in the commodity cycle. And at the moment, it's a sort of a 50-50. We've had a great run. We've gone sideways for about 4 or 5 months. Is there another leg up or not? If there is, Merafe is going to do very well. I'm sure of that because it's so singly geared towards a specific company or commodity, and Chrome has been doing well. But I'd rather sort of focus my attention on what the likes of the bigger multi-commodity companies, Anglo, Billet and Glencore, is doing, and take your lead from there, because those are the first guys that are going to start moving. And then if you want to have excitement in your life, go for a single commodity stock like Merafe, for example.
The problem is with a single commodity company, sometimes with a single asset like Merafe, is the problem is that when they generate excess profits, like they almost surely would be doing at the moment, what do you do with those excess profits? Mm. What is your asset allocation strategy? The same goes for something like Kumba Iron Ore. You haven't got the ability to reinvest that in new plant and property into new. You can't compound that growth over time.
Yeah.
You're actually a victim to the cycle. And what do you do with your free cash flow? You have to distribute that to your shareholders. And so when you see a yield, you know, that yield must be fairly high. You must at least expect an 8% plus yield from a company like this.
Yeah.
You know, if you consider the risk and consider at what part of the cycle we're at, you have to at least get 8% dividend yield from the stock.
Okay. And so we've got a couple of questions on Stadio. One viewer says it looks interesting under R5, and there's big demand for private tertiary education. And then Francois would also like your long-term view. Brickus.
I think there's a place for Stadio, but I don't know at what price there's a place for Stadio's. Obviously, the free education initiative has put a bit of a spanner in the works of the private institutions like that, and also a lot of the possible students are immigrating. So you've got to turn that around as well. Mm-hmm. I really don't know at what price Stadio is going to be good value. But that it has a future, I'm quite convinced of. In other words, the state of education in this country almost expects something like Stadio to do well.
And they're not, do you have a price that you'd buy it?
Yeah, the right price, maybe. The thing is that they're not without competition. Advitec has also got a very established tertiary business, side business, which is actually attractive, maybe even more attractive than that of Stadio. And there's a lot of non-profits as well. And, you know, the world is flat at the moment when you look at education. It's easy to get a degree from a London or from a Manchester or even from the US. It's easy to get an online degree these days. There's a lot of competition from abroad, online competition. Mm-hmm. And the business model, once again, for education might be changing rapidly over the next few years. And you don't want to compete with non-profits. Those guys, you know, are subsidized by philanthropy.
Yeah.
And that will ultimately put margins under pressure for those guys that are competing for profit.
Okay, so we have to go with our stock picks. We're almost out of time. And Rikus, you've chosen Harris.
Yeah, it's an American technology company and broad range of products, but specifically geared towards the U.S. Defense Force. So to me, it's almost an insurance, considering who Trump has appointed as his Secretary of State. I mean, I'm dead serious because he's an absolute idiot. And in that sense, that little war premium has just gone up. And I think it's expensive at 30, but it's not going to be because nobody's demanding their products. I'm quite sure that defense industry, apart from the tax break that telecoms are getting in any case, are going to be boosted by policy.
Okay. You're going to the financial sector in the UK with Lloyds.
Yeah, Lloyds, the best run bank at the moment in Europe, by far. Best stewardship, best allocation of capital, and the government is not a shareholder anymore. They sold out their last stake middle last year. About, you've got a proper yield at these levels, and the thing is, Brexit risk is at the moment a dark cloud hanging over that sector as a whole. The difference is, apart from Lloyds being the best run bank in my opinion, it's also mono-national. So, any exit from the common area is going to affect them less. They don't have to worry about cross-channel stuff. Mm-hmm. They don't have cross-channel businesses. A pickup in yields in the UK, which we're seeing at the moment, together with obviously pickups in the US, will bode well for the net interest margin for what, you know, is actually a low level of earnings at the moment. So once again, you've got this asymmetric return profile, very little that can go wrong. Brexit almost priced into to a large extent, and you've got significant upside for a cheaply priced, well-run company.
Gents, yes. Nice to see you there. Thank you both very much. That's all we have time for tonight. I know there's a couple of questions we didn't get to. Juliet will be in tomorrow to take those as well as all your other stock-related questions. Thanks again to Rikus Kombrink from Capicraft, Rikus Rieders from PSG Wealth. So we have to go with our stock picks. We're almost out of time. And Rikus, you've chosen Harris.
Yeah, it's an American technology company and broad range of products, but specifically geared towards the U.S. Defense Force. So to me, it's almost an insurance, considering who Trump has appointed as his Secretary of State. I mean, I'm dead serious because he's an absolute idiot. And in that sense, that little war premium has just gone up. And I think it's expensive at 30, but it's not going to be because nobody's demanding their products. I'm quite sure that defense industry, apart from the tax break that telecoms are getting in any case, are going to be boosted by policy.
Okay. You're going to the financial sector in the UK with Lloyds.
Yeah, Lloyds, the best run bank at the moment in Europe, by far. Best stewardship, best allocation of capital, and the government is not a shareholder anymore. They sold out their last stake middle last year, about. You've got a proper yield at these levels. And the thing is, Brexit risk is at the moment a dark cloud hanging over that sector as a whole. The difference is, apart from Lloyds being the best run bank in my opinion, it's also mononational. So you know, any exit from the common area is going to affect them less. They don't have to worry about cross-channel stuff. Mm-hmm. They don't have cross-channel businesses. A pickup in yields in the UK, which we're seeing at the moment, together with obviously pickups in the US, will bode well for the net interest margin, for what you know is actually a low level of earnings at the moment. So once again, you've got this asymmetric return profile. Very little that can go wrong. Brexit almost priced into to a large extent, and you've got significant upside for a cheaply priced, well-run company.
James, yes. Nice to see you there. Thank you both very much. That's all we have time for tonight. And there's a couple of questions we didn't get to. Juliet will be in tomorrow to take those, as well as all your other stock-related questions. Thanks again to Dricus Combrink from Capicraft, Dricus Rieders from PSG Wealth. Yes.